Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
Welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? This is, what a crazy experience. It's like this feels like a professional podcast. We have a producer in the room. We started on time. Look at the camera angles are changing. The audio quality is good. I feel like our little podcast is all grown up.
We're 15 minutes late.
Fair. That's fair. That's fair. I'm not gonna argue with you on that one. I'm still happy to be here. That's not changed.
That's true.
Yeah, there you go.
Were you unhappy to be here before?
No. Guys, it's the Masters of Modern podcast.
I guess that's why it hasn't changed.
Yeah, we talk modern on this show. This is the live stream. That's Alex Kessler, as he mentioned. I'm Ben Bateman. Marshall James.
I did this already.
I just wanted to, you know, reroute the ship.
Trying to steal my moves.
I like your moves. Marshall James is our new producer, and he's in the room. He's just a few feet away from us. Marshall, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. Awesome. You look great.
Well, coming from you, that means the world.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Your head was the
thumbnail?
The thumbnail for a hot second.
Excellent.
People got only here for the sneak preview show on the live stream. Speaking of which, for those who don't know, we try to regularly live stream this show. We're aiming to do it at somewhere between 5 and 5:30 start times on Tuesdays now.
Yep.
Hence the professional producer-iness that Ben has been talking about so far this episode. To make sure we're doing it, or you're able to listen in, go to our YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/TheMMCast, and you can subscribe and like and favorite, and you can watch live streams. You'll get an alert, and then we'll also share out the live stream when we're on Twitter or Facebook to all of our groups and stuff. If you follow us on Twitter, we are at TheMMCast. I am at Kess Wiley.
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media. That's where you can follow us. Please like, subscribe to this YouTube channel if you are streaming live, if you're watching the video of this. This is episode 201. There was some wonkiness as far as the actual episode numbers, as we did like a two-part set review and stuff like that, but this technically officially to us is episode 201.
Well, yeah, so if you look on our collective.company website, it says 203 for this episode, and last week was 202, and we said it was 200. It's because we did bonus episodes early or middle on in the career.
Yeah.
And the way iTunes works is you don't get bonus episodes.
So a couple things in case you missed last week and you're tuning in for the first time here. Alex and I are now into the 300s, 2 to 300 episodes of the show, and we're very excited about the future because we wanted to make some improvements. So one of them is you'll notice there's card images on the screen here. Video, we had to buy a new Zoom recorder to improve our audio. The old one was getting kind of faulty. Yeah, we're kind of upgrading the set. That's going to continue happening as we go. So keep up to date there. And as he mentioned a second ago and I mentioned, like, subscribe to the YouTube channel. It's one of the most helpful things you guys can possibly do. We're almost at 3,000 subscribers, which is really cool. And, yeah, we have a sweet episode coming up today on the show. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Mythic Championships, a new modern product that has been teased to be coming out in February with maybe, we think, possibly some new exclusive modern cards. We are going to be talking about some brand new Ravnica Allegiance cards that are affecting modern. And then finally, having an entire discussion about some of the alternative ways you can be winning in modern outside of the A-list deck archetypes, some alt win conditions that Alex and I have a lot of faith in, plus some Electro Dominance talk because Electro Dominance is dope.
He says faith. That's a strong word.
So that is today's itinerary. And I think we should kind of just get into it because, you know, shout-outs are what they are. So first and foremost, Magic news.
Did it.
It was announced in the last week that 64 players going to the $1 million Magic Invitational, which is an invite-only event with 64 players. I'm right about that, right? It is 64?
Yes.
Yeah, 64 players for $1 million. First place is going to win $250,000. A Magic event where you can win $250K, guys. Unheard of, crazy. Obviously, Wizards competing heavily in the esports world with a purse like that, starting to really put their foot in the ring. The last eight players it was announced are going to be qualified players who are grinding February 1st to February 28th on Magic Arena. That is how you qualify. So you have to grind an arena, be one of the top-ranked players. If you are one of the top eight ranked players, you'll join the other 56 invite-only players, which are primarily the Magic Pro League, as well as some exclusively invited other personalities, streamers, etc. Alex, what do you think about this? It's like a pretty crazy amount of money to be able to win playing Magic.
I mean, I've kind of been emotionally ready for that since they made kind of the financial announcements late last year, or I guess middle of last year. And the thing that's exciting is a little bit more of a breakdown of how this, at least this invitational war work. Now, I do believe, and Wizards is now kind of given the messaging, because there was a lot of worry, especially this plus the GP, you know, no text coverage anymore announcement happening coincided.
Right.
Like, what's going on with the Pro Tour and how do we qualify for everything? I do think we'll still have classic Pro Tours that will also have prizes around this size, but they're adding two invitationals that are meant to be more of an arena-focused event style. And I think that the ranking system of 8 players on arena is going to be a very fascinating moment and of the end of that week. So, like, the end of the period where you get locked in to go to this, there's going to be an hour where you just have to be jamming as many games as you possibly can and try and win all of them, because your Elo ranking is going to live update as it's going.
Right.
And, like, the difference between 8th and 9th places is going to be real tight. And I'm equal parts worried and excited to see how that moment happens.
And just like any sport, the people that are on the edge that don't quite make it are going to be totally crushed, disappointed. Obviously, the difference is that if it's tennis or some other thing, you're qualifying, you have usually a qualifying event, like a single event, that if you place high enough in that event, you'll get the qualification, versus an arbitrary number of games you're jamming and having to do really well in all of to keep your ranking high. And that's going to be the part of it that's the mad dash, kind of, that's going to be unfortunate. But nonetheless, it's such a step forward in our community that I can't say anything but positive things about it. I mean, honestly, when I read that you could qualify by just grinding on Arena, it made me want to go and start grinding on Arena that second. Like, it really did. I got that feeling of like, oh, this is so cool. I can go do this. And that's a good thing.
So what are you doing? Why are you here?
I didn't start grinding.
You could win $250,000.
I would have to spend every moment of my life.
Yes, that is what people are doing currently. I think that's like the unhealthy part of the whole situation, is that like, to do it, you probably, you know, there's going to be 300 people that are going to really try, and only 8 of them get that. And it's a month-long qualifying period.
Right.
And to go through the effort to accomplish that seems possibly unsustainable in the long run. And I'm interested to see – that's kind of what I'm talking about, is the negative side of this.
And it's just one event. I mean, the bottom line is they're still going to be – they will still have qualification-based events. That'll still happen. And that's always the dream of a Magic player, is you get into a big event by qualifying through some other means, and that'll still happen. So, you know, the begs the question, though, with so much focus being put on Arena, we've asked before, what of Paper Magic? What's going to happen to Modern? You know, and that was proposed to someone on an interview. I know the professor was in it. This was a live stream happening last week. We have a link to the article here, but the actual personalities involved, it's somebody at Wizards whose name is not coming to me right now. But basically the question was asked, what is going to happen to Modern? Does all this focus right now on digital Magic mean that Modern is going to go by the wayside? And the answer was absolutely not. Modern is being supported. It will stick around. So much so that this person in this interview said, keep your eyes out in February for an exclusive Modern product. I don't think he actually said those words, but that's what was indicated.
Mm-hmm.
And my question to you is, what the heck is that product?
So it could be a few things. You know, they have stated there are no longer going to be master sets. And, you know, literally Gavin Verhey said it on the podcast last week, did a State of the Union type of breakdown of the state of, you know, Magic product design today. That's what was on the mothership today. And even in that, he's like, you know, master sets are retired. Now, with that in mind, he also went on kind of all the other products that have been successful. You know, the new kind of intro decks have been successful. The Challenger decks that we, you know, we did an entire episode on talking about what modern Challenger decks can look like, looking at kind of what the event deck was and then what these Challenger decks ended up being for Standard and what deck types. And I think Titan Shift was one of the decks we came up with, and there was a few other ones that we talked about.
You're looking for stuff that you could do at a sustainable price.
Correct.
Right.
You build a deck that isn't maybe tier A, but could be like a tier B version of that list.
Because what can you charge as Wizards? $50? $100?
I think you can charge $100.
You can charge $99.99.
Maybe a little bit more. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the back end of that is, you know, master sets are done, but themed draft specific drafting sets are not. We had Battle Bond last year. We had Unstable the year before that. I'm so glad I'm getting Unstable right and not calling it Unglued anymore.
I'm impressed.
Big win for me.
It's like a sage of the palace is what you've just done.
It was Sage Rhino. He sages around, all right? Casting spells, draining people for 3 life. Lightning Helix. back to what we were talking about. So, you know, but with that in mind, it's very possible we're getting a limited, focused modern set, kind of taking what the modern master sets were doing beforehand, but focusing it on that. Now, the really exciting question I have is, the most successful product so far in the world of new product they've come out with outside of their standard releases
Commander.
Are stuff with new cards. Or Commander is
the
primary.
Commander sets have been really
but Commander,
successful, right?
Conspiracy, Battle Bond, Unstable, all of these have one thing in common, and that is they have cards that are not standard legal cards being printed.
And on the whole, those cards, and granted, like we talk about, sometimes we talk about the format Highlander Roulette and like how exciting it is to get to play with brand new cards.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those cards are some of the most exciting things when you're dealing with Commander decks and you're dealing with things that are a little bit wider and they're not as like focused, tight, competitive.
Right.
Because anything from like Spellseeker is a great example of a card that like I love that card. Mm-hmm. What a cool card to have printed. Or when they did Recruiter of the Guard in Conspiracy One, like you know it completes that kind of cycle that you had with Imperial Recruiter. Like that's a really cool thing to print.
Cycle.
Well, I mean, they just did the other half.
We now have white, red, and blue, actually.
Because Spellseeker is the blue one?
Yeah. So we could get...
oh, that's a good point.
It could be an unfinished cycle. We just need
a
two
more.
A
three-drop green and a three-drop black tutor?
Yeah.
So green gets you instant or sorcery, converted mana cost two or less. Or that's what blue gets you. And the others are power and toughness.
Mm-hmm.
So what would green? It would have to... It's weird that green wouldn't get you a creature. The other two have already dealt with
land. Any land puts into play.
Fierce Empath is six or more.
True. That's top end. I mean, then there's Treasure Mage for blue. So I think that would be – actually, I think it's enchantment.
Treasure Mage, but you already have Spellseeker, and Spellseeker references a denomination of two.
And
so
Trinket, Treasure, and Trophy Mage.
Yeah.
Those are its own thing. I'm saying for green, finding an enchantment for two or less, that doesn't exist.
And green searching out an enchantment
would
be
totally fine. It's
flavorful.
On color
play. Yeah,
it's color pie. And then
green, white,
and then black
recently.
Is anything you lose life.
You lose two life.
Yeah,
a three mana creature
that
demonic
vampire
tutor,
tutors.
A vamp tutor puts it on top.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
I'm okay with that. Seems powerful, but it seems
Marshall's terrified.
No, I think if it's a 1/1 for three that you lose two, it puts it on top of your library.
Well, it has to be two or less. It still has the costing restriction.
CMC two or less.
Yeah,
non land card. Converted mana cost two or less. Okay. I'm on board.
Yeah, cool.
Sick. Gavin, I hope you're listening.
So, beyond that.
Yeah, you were talking about basically one thing that's in common with all these sets is that they introduce new cards.
New cards into those sets. And I think that, you know, that's something the modern community has talked about forever. Of can you print cards that aren't in standard into modern directly? Can we get a Force of Will reprint into it? Can we get Counterspell directly put into it? Are there cards that are too powerful for standard by an inch? And Counterspell has been in standard sets. They've talked about how they were close to getting Counterspell into standard over the last 3 years. And it just is just too powerful enough, which means it's probably power level fine or neutral in modern.
What was the last standard printing of Counterspell? Was it in Mercadian Masks?
Seventh edition
was the last standard.
I have a foil one.
Print.
Signed by Richard Garfield.
You have a seventh edition foil Counterspell?
Mm-hmm.
That's so sick.
It's on my like top four cards that I have that are favorites.
Because it's like a black border mm-hmm. foil.
Time Stop with no reminder text. 10th edition Time Stop.
Sweet.
Just UN the turn foil.
Yeah.
So that one's good too.
That's pretty awesome.
I think
talking about could that happen in modern.
So I think my question is, do you think it's going to be a Challenger style deck? Like, or is it, there's two, I think there's two, three successful models. There's the
yep.
Challenger style tournament ready decks. There's the Commander style decks that are kind of just Challenger decks. They're similar. And then there's limited formats, right? So far, those are kind of the most successful extension products that they've released. Which one of those do you feel like is most likely a benefit to modern players?
So if it's specifically a modern product, which is what I think it is,
mm-hmm.
you can't make it a modern draft, like greatest hits, because that's just making modern masters again.
Correct.
So you can't do that. I think the Challenger decks are a cool idea. But the thing about the Challenger decks is that if you're introducing new cards, it makes them kind of a weirdly unfair thing because they're introducing a product that's not available in any other way than to buy a $100 or $150 deck to get
mm-hmm.
those specific cards. Now, if that's the only place they're available, like a $100 or $150 product.
And there's two tiers to this. There's printing cards that are now legal and modern that had existed before that.
So you're saying like if you put a single Force of Will into a Challenger deck
It's now legal in Modern.
And now Force of Will from Eternal Masters or wherever it's from. Eternal Masters, I think.
It was the last time it was printed.
That now and the old ones become... But, like, a card that's already $75.
Well, it doesn't have to be Force of Will. Like, that's an extreme example. Like, Counterspell is a great example. Or Worldly Tutor.
Days is the one that we've talked about the most that I think is the most clever. That I like the way that the interplay of Shocklands and Days interact in Modern. I think that that's pretty strong.
And I don't think they start with Days. I think there's a ton of safer cards they can just add into Modern. I think something like Days would be an interesting option. But, like,
Flusterstorm.
Right.
Flusterstorm is a great
one.
Reprint.
And so you have these... That's step one, because then it's not unfair. Then it's just like, oh, these cards are legal, and I can get them out of this Challenger deck. The other option is a limited format, where then they can – I don't think you can print new cards into a Challenger-style deck that are legal and Modern for what you described. Then it's a tournament staple card.
And it becomes too hard to get.
Right. I think
– It becomes Scavenging Ooze, what Scavenging Ooze was in Legacy when it was just a Commander.
I mean, Tunane Nemesis is the correct
and
one.
Both of them. Those are like $30, $40 creatures that immediately are like printed as – You know, a couple $20 bills.
Right, because you had to buy that box set, which was about $30. Whatever the cost of the actual box is the cost of one of those cards at that point.
So I think at the end of the day...
So I think it's a limited set with new... I think it's a $4.99 or $3.99 limited set. Or how much was Unstable for a pack, Marshall?
I think it was just $4.
Yeah, so $3.99 pack that has either reprints... I think it is new cards that are in Modern.
Yeah, I think
or Challenger decks with reprints.
Here's the problem. If it's a limited set like a Battle Bond, right? Let's just say it's a limited set like a Battle Bond. So right now, out of Battle Bond, what is the most sought after tournament card from Battle Bond that was brand new? Because I know you reprinted True Name in that set, and you had, I think, Exploration got a reprint in that set. You had like a Doubling Season reprint in that set, maybe. But I'm trying to think, what is the is there a card printed in Battle Bond that was brand new? That became a Legacy staple, like you know, your Arena Rector kind of card. Did they swing for the fences and get one?
So Battle Bond is a weird space for me because I have never drafted it.
I'm just trying to think of or Conspiracy being the same one. Is like,
Conspiracy I can talk to a little bit better.
Dak Fade was the first card printed that became a vintage card
out of those guys,
right?
Yeah.
And until Dak Faden got the reprint, Dak Faden got pretty expensive, right?
Regular Dak Faden didn't go over like a normal
$20
mythic
or something.
Limited in like a small set probably, so like $20 to $50. Foils were like $800.
I remember that.
So that's a different conversation, but I think that's always going to be
a different conversation.
That's
not for gameplay. That's for collectability. So I think like the reality is, if you're to print some sort of limited draft environment that is the cards in this draft environment are Modern legal. Mm-hmm. If that's what happens. The only thing I would caution against is making a mythic rare. That's a tournament staple that right. You know is going to be of a power level that is a four of index. If you make it a mythic and a limited run, limited oriented set, I think you're in trouble. I think if you make like a really strong uncommon sideboard card,
if they're doing it, if they're pulling the Band-Aid off on printing new cards directly in the Modern that were invented specifically for Modern that didn't exist beforehand, it's everywhere. You can't do that without a high ASFAN. When for people who don't know, ASFAN is the like as it's. When you open a pack, how often does this type of card show up? This is the biggest thing they've done for Modern since Modern Masters 1.
Yeah.
And – or since this podcast started. and so with that in mind, they're not going to just be like, oh, there's two cards added. It's going to be a little bit bigger than that. Now, if it's reprinting them, yeah, I think you do Library. I think there'll be a Mythic. I think there'll be a few Mythics maybe. I think there'll maybe be a cycle of Planeswalkers that are, like, printed. Or, you know, my guess is Kaya Ghost Assassin printed into that set because she's dope. She's the face of a current standard set.
She's kind of right on the edge of, like, Modern playable.
She's never going to be too good for the format, but she's going to be cool. People will play
people
her
like that
or
card.
Try to play her. Like,
yeah,
you know, that's
agree.
The kind of stuff that I think is – interesting to see, and I think it's if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. If they're just going to tip their foot in the water, then I think it's like maybe one high profile mythic.
I think they also could take some
cycle.
They could take some of the commander cards that are sweet that people like that are not Modern legal, and they could reprint them into the draft environment so that you could now play a few of those cards in Modern.
Right. And I think there's something safe about that as well because at least all of the cards that have existed before have been tested by the Gauntlet of Legacy, and there's a ton of them that haven't even seen close to seeing play. Like, I think printing two-name Nemesis in the Modern is dumb. But, like, printing I don't know. There's that one curse that you can put on an opponent, and they take
the black one.
The
yeah.
black one. Or
I think it'd be cool to see like Duretti Ingenious Iconoclast printed into Modern. Like I think that's a great example of a card where it's like that's not that powerful. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It's a fun card that does something that we're not used to.
I think I can. I'm pretty confident that other than maybe Dak Faden, and I think even Dak Faden would maybe be fine.
He might be
any non-standard legal planeswalker they've ever printed is probably fine to put into Modern.
Yeah, I mean, there's
Duretti original is probably the most dangerous.
Yeah, I think the where you get into trouble is if you start reprinting any of the commander creatures, because I think a lot of those
way specifically planeswalkers. Yeah. No, the creature. There's a ton of commander cards I would never print into Modern. That seems dumb.
I think some could be sweet.
Sure, I'm not saying make all of commander products legal, but I think like
how would you feel about Brea being legal in Modern?
I think that's problematic. Probably
just like. Does too many cool things.
It's like
it's a four drop. It's a four color four drop.
And there are things that make it not too good, but I think it like that's a card that is on the edge of this could be the most powerful four drop ever printed in the format. Why? And then maybe not do
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I love that card. I would play the crap out of that card in Modern. All right, guys, moving on from the discussion of a new Modern product. We're definitely excited about it, so keep your eyes open for that. We are definitely hoping that if that gets announced, we will get a preview card to talk about.
Multiple people in the chat have mentioned also that right now is actually, for the Challenger side of things, a perfect time to print them because shocks are all around $5. So you can lean really heavy in the shocks, maybe, and then you know no fetch lands, but like that's enough of a kind of a lant mana base to be able to get away with like especially something like Scapeshift.
I don't know if shocks are ever going to be worth anything ever again. They were already so on. They never really went back up. They all like they got up to like one of them got up to like 17 maybe was the highest like a steam vents, but a lot of them were like $9.
Yeah.
So like now with another printing into the ground, I feel like shocks are going to be under $10 forever.
Yeah, but there's a few now that are still already over 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think Steam Vents is still doing well because it's a good – like right now, so much of their value is also associated with Standard. And with this new influx of players, there's a ton of new arena guy people that are coming into the format that want to play Standard and don't have any shocks.
And need to go get four of.
And they need to get four of. So, I mean, like right now, my biggest complaint with arena over any complaint across the board is that – getting lands takes rare slots. Like, the fact that there are a ton of decks I can't play because I have to waste my rare wild cards. I have, like, 12 to 20 mythic wild cards and zero gold rare ones because lands are – I have to buy them.
So you've played a good amount of Arena. Yeah. And I would imagine some of the cards that are showing up in Arena
– Segway!
That are like, making an impact, I definitely feel like are making a bit of an impact in Modern. Like, not all of the cards, but there's definitely some sweet ones. So, like – we read this article written by Emma Handy about sideboards and the difference in those decks and sideboards mm-hmm. now versus the before and after the banning of KCI.
Less of a sideway, yeah.
And some of the cards that I want to talk about are cards that are showing up now in deck lists now that the format's a little different. So the banning of Kirkland Ironworks a few weeks ago has definitely opened up the format.
Right.
And specifically, let's start talking about this mono-red deck. The mono-red decks are playing two different Ravnica Allegiance cards as four ofs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is pretty massive. You know, we're seeing Skewer the Critics and Light Up the Stage.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played either of these in Arena?
Not Arena. I haven't played Arena since Allegiance came out. I have been playing Kingdom Hearts and Resident Evil 2.
Clash Royale.
No, Brawl Stars.
Are you playing Brawl Stars now?
I'm on both.
Fair.
On the Supercell train. But back to Magic conversation. I've been paying attention to it, and obviously what's really interesting about it is that how those two cards can lower the curve of those burn decks so that not only can they play less lands, but even what's it called is becoming bad.
Eidolon of Rebel.
Yeah,
I mean,
that was a good.
You can shave down to like 18 lands,
mm-hmm.
18, 19 lands and burn because you are now playing two more one drops. And that those burn decks, often the way that you'll beat those decks, if they get a good start on you, is their hand will just have a glut of two drops.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not, if they stall out on three lands or something like that, it's just not that convenient for them to go through two drop after two drop against you. And so the fact that now you've got, and I remember when we were in Hong Kong talking about as these spoilers were coming out, I definitely pointed out to you Light Up the Stage. That was a card that I was like, this is crazy. And you're like, why? And I was like, I'll tell you exactly why. It's because you get to the end of next turn, which means even if you hit two lands.
Well, but I mean, I recognize that at the time, but sure. Yeah, continue.
Well, no, because it's weirdly worded. It's a surprising wording on that card.
Sure.
That you can hit, you can exile two. So for those of you that don't know what it is, it's going to be up on the screen, but it's a card for red two. It's a sorcery. Exile the top two cards of your library until the end of your next turn, you may play those cards. For spectacle, you can play it for one red if you've dealt damage to your opponent this turn, which means you lightning bolt your opponent for one red, you play the card, it exiles the top two. If you hit mountain, you play a mountain this turn, and you play a mountain next turn. That's the worst case scenario. You just clear two lands and play them both. You almost can't lose when you play this card. Like, it's so good. This is one of the best red draw spells probably ever printed. Faithless Looting is the best red draw spell ever printed, right?
Yeah.
This is number two?
Time will tell.
I mean, it's really good.
It's really good.
Yeah. So that's the first card, and you're seeing that show up as a 4 of that kind of lowers the curve in these red decks. The second card is Skewer the Critics, which is a little more simple. It's the same card. Now, is Skewer the Critics an instant or sorcery? I don't have it in front of me.
Sorcery.
Okay, it's a sorcery speed lightning bolt, so it's more like a chain lightning. Same deal. Red and two, and for Spectral, you can play it for one red. So now you have four more lightning bolts in the deck. And for that reason, you get to lower the curve of your deck drastically.
Well, yeah, and the Emmy Handy article, she kind of breaks down a little bit on this as well. But, you know, to summarize some of it, you know, you really do have an option to, like, Burns, one of Burns' biggest weaknesses and one of the main ways it loses is just like, oh, my whole hand is two drops. And these both make it so that's just less likely to happen. And you have more kind of consistent play and be able to play two spells a turn and keep yourself above life from what your opponent's doing. And it just really helps you kind of win it back. And then the draw spell, obviously, adding a draw spell to Burn that is on theme with them is probably very good for them.
Yeah, like it's, I mean, because like here's what I can think of, like the whole like one for two. So let's take Sign and Blood, Night's Whisper as good examples of cards that have a sort of a similar effect. They're one or two mana. They draw two cards. They kind of accelerate you. You're trading one for two. The difference between this costing one mana and costing two mana is so significant. And Night's Whisper is already a good card. That card's already fringe playable. Like, I've played Night's Whisper in decks before. The fact that you're able to draw two cards for one red is specific and unique to this deck. The fact that you're always going to have red mana for it.
Right.
I'll be curious to see when this starts to show up in other decks that aren't just mono red, because I think it's a much better card than...
And I think red mono red, the red white is not that far off from each other. I mean, yeah. I think they both kind of can, like, being red white as far as a mana base go is not that much more difficult than just being mono red. And it's just the reason the argument is like, do you need it? And yeah. Like the red white cards are more powerful, but by being mono red, you have more life. And which one is a better payoff?
Yeah. So other cards that are starting to make an impact in this post-banning world. Electro Dominance. You've got the Electro Dominance deck that's playing, you know, Living End and Ancestral Vision. That's a pretty cool deck. Pretty cool card. I know when you and I talked about the format, trying to figure out what we thought the most powerful card was going to be, this was on definitely both of our lists, right?
From the very beginning, the fact that you can cast Ancestral Visions is like the first thing I noticed you can do with this card.
How do you feel about it when they do something like this? When they take a card that... Because there was a red X instant, right? Was it Volcanic Geyser? The card, and that's an uncommon in most limited formats. Like, I've seen that printed a bunch of times. So when they take that card and they're just like, we're gonna just make the rare version that's way better, like, it's all, you know, that there's like an internal conversation that happens at Wizards where someone says, is this okay? Can we just push this? We want to make this a splashy card. We're gonna make it strictly better than this other one. Do you like when they do that sort of thing?
Yeah,
just because it's pushing the power level, it's fun.
Especially when it's creative ways that does something different. Like, if this was, like, red X, do X damage times two, I maybe wouldn't like it as much.
Yeah,
but, like,
right.
Red X, this is a cool thing you can do, and in Standard, it's going to probably not do very much. At worst, it's kind of like a Bloodbraid Elf or a, what's a face Hydra, that, like, let you get double value off of those things. Or the Shriant, the Expertise, is also a similar card
space
as this. And people have played – I've seen lists for this card that are playing some of the Expertise as your Electro Dominance and As Foretold's 9, 10, 11, and 12.
Well, right, because this list that we were looking at here is playing 4 Electro Dominance, 4 As Foretold, and –
the black one, right? Because it's a board – oh, no, it's the –
maybe it's just those two?
No, just those two. I've seen ones that are playing black that are playing for the black one because it's a board wipe. -3/-3 to all creatures. So it's like a card that is good against bad matchups and then a card that's good in this situation.
Yeah, Sram's Expertise.
Sram's Expertise. No. Sram's is you get 3/1
ones. Yahini's. There you go. Yahini's Expertise, the black one. Yeah. I have played all of the Expertises because I took a deck, well, an Expertise deck to a GP once.
Yeah, there you go. So this is a better card for that than probably those.
For sure.
So yeah, and like the things that really being paying attention to with, because like right now the easiest one to go through, because this deck has already been proven to be good in the past, has won a GP before, I believe, is the Living End version. And that one, what this does is allows you to kind of play, instead of playing a weird cascade game plan that limits what kind of cards you can cast, with As Foretold and this card, you're able to just play good cards now. because all the counter spells you want, any removal spells you want, and like blue red with what was the set with the cycling cards, the Egyptian themed one,
Amonkhet
coming out. They added a bunch of really powerful blue and red cycle cards that before you had to be in black or green and use some of the ones from Shards of Valara block. Now with the fact that you get these blue ones, and some of them are just good cards on their own, so that Phoenix that just is like a 4/4/4 that scries every turn, like I would take that over any, like, that's a card that I would just play.
The card's sweet.
It doesn't do that exactly. It's every time you cycle
at the you're talking about the 4/4/4 that you scry at the beginning of your turn, it's an opening hand, that card.
No,
you're talking about the Curator of Mysteries.
You one blue, you cycle it. Curator of Mysteries, what does it do?
I think it's like one blue for...
It has one blue to cycle it, and has whenever you cycle or discard a card, scry one.
Yeah, whenever you cycle or discard a card, scry one. It cycles for one blue, and it's a 4/4 Flying Sphinx for four. Any thoughts in the chat on cards that they're seeing affect Modern that they want to talk about?
Yeah.
Somebody asks, do you guys think of the new pod list under Vanifar? They're both four-color lists and teamer lists. Would love to hear Alex talk about it since he loves pods so much.
Who was the commenter who said
that? Bob Loeb
has a question about Vanifar, Prime Speaker Vanifar. Alex, how do you feel about, like, we talked a lot about this card when we saw the preview again. We were in Hong Kong together. The viability.
Oh, the pod one, yeah.
The viability of a pod deck in Modern right now.
I think it takes time. I think, like, Birthing Pod was the best deck in Modern from the beginning of Modern, but took 2 years for anyone to actually figure it out, because getting the list right and getting it working and getting good at it, like, it's such a hard deck to play correctly, because you really need to know every single card in your deck, exactly what your opponent is doing, every card. Like, it's such a deep card and dive to get into, and this card is easier to get rid of. It is less fast than Pod is, but it also, on the same time, is a creature, so there's more cute things you can do with it. So, will this show up as a deck in Modern? Absolutely. How long it's going to take? Give me, I'll say, like a year. By the end of this year, we'll start seeing some Vanifar decks, and maybe way earlier is possible.
I think probably earlier. It's a pretty unique effect.
Sure.
That would be my guess.
It's not a unique effect. There's at least one other card that does it.
Yeah, it's just banned.
Yeah.
Another card that people are playing with right now is Deputy of Detention. Deputy of Detention is one of them, and another one...
It's not a human, though, right? Or it is a human. Yeah. It's a... Thank God.
Yeah, and
can
then...
we just erase the human creature type?
Well, and then you have also... What's her name?
Lavinia.
Yeah, the new... The new bear.
Yep.
Yeah. So I mean, those are cards that are starting to show up, at least in lists a little bit.
And other cards that on the chat that people ask. Someone wanted to know if Dovin has any legs. So the new Planeswalker. I love that card.
I haven't seen it show up.
I have not seen it show up anywhere. But also right now, this is the worst time to play control decks. Like, my favorite story of all PTQ world is that I was getting really good finishes playing blue-white control with, like, a weird brew that had Teleria West and Jace in it, and was getting, like, cycling through Engineer Explosives with Academy Ruins.
Yeah.
And then was playing four Wall of Omens in Bloodbraid Elf Jund era, the first time it was good. And was getting, you know, generally in top 20s at PTQs for that season, and then it got banned, and immediately I couldn't win a game because... Control decks want to know what the format's going to look like, and we're walking into a format that literally can be different every day. And right now, the big thing is that people's sideboards are now so much different than they were before KCI was banned.
Yeah.
That, like, this week Dredge could be good, and then the following week Dredge will be bad because people are playing Artifact Hate. I don't know what the best strategy to be hating on is right now.
The good players had so much peripheral Artifact Hate packed into their boards. Mm-hmm. It was so focused because the hardest deck to interact with a good player was Kirkland Ironworks.
Right.
It was so good. So now people are able to spread their sideboards back out. And because of that, you're able to kind of play these somewhat non-interactive strategies that are very streamlined.
But at the same time, like, you know, the reason KCI was what it was in the format is it made decks bad. And those decks are now no longer bad in the format because there's no longer this big bad that hated it out. So now the format is much more diverse, which, A, puts control in its worst position, even though it had a bad KCI matchup before. And then on top of that, like, if I'm a control deck, I want to know, oh, Dredge is 10% of the metagame.
Yeah.
If there was a Modern GP next weekend and I was attending it, I wouldn't know how good Dredge is. Like, I don't know what the dominance of Dredge is. I would play mono Affinity all day long if I, like, could, because, like, everyone's gonna be like, oh, KCI is done, I don't need 12 things of graveyard artifact hand. I'm gonna be like, well, here's my
Hardened Scales deck or something like that,
flying Ornithopter with 30 counters on it, and don't have Ancient Grudges anymore, so good game.
Any other cards people wanted to talk about?
Wilderness Reclamation.
People are making comments about Wilderness Reclamation. This is a card that strikes me as an Alex Kessler card. This feels like a card you would like.
You untap, and then you don't have they can't do anything because you have Cryptic Command open.
Yeah, it is expensive, but I mean the fact that you just like sorcery speed resolve it.
It's free. Can't be more expensive. Can't be cheaper than that.
And it's also not a creature, which makes it harder for people to interact with it unless they have a counterspell.
I mean, like, look at Teferi, right? Like, Teferi was a 5-mana card, so that is expensive. But because it lets you untap 2 lands, it's really a 3-mana card that also plays in a way that makes it so counter magic is good. So Reclamation, like, I would love to be looking at playing a Taking Turns deck right now in Modern. Like a blue-green where you're playing this card as a way to A, ramp into some of your more expensive Taking Turns cards, because there are expensive ones, and B, being able to just like mono Cryptic Command and douse, what's the, not replicate, dowsing blue, and then you can tap blue as many times as you want, and then you tap that many permanents.
Giga Drowse.
Like just mono Giga Drowsing and Cryptic Commanding my opponents out of a game. Like,
what? How would? But how does Wilderness Reclamation allow you to ramp into cards?
Because it untaps at the end of your turn. So if you have an instant speed spell, you can tap your lands in response to Wilderness Reclamation. It lets you untap your lands. You can tap them again. That's how they're casting that take an extra turn thing on turn 4 or turn 5.
But they have to be instants.
They have to be instants.
Got it.
Or have flash.
Sick. Okay, gotcha. So that's what people are doing. Okay, so that's interesting. So another card
so it's
that
like,
we
it's both a insane ramp spell for expensive blue spells or X spells. What's the red wet? What's or Sphinx's Revelation is a great example. Like being able to Sphinx's Rev for 5+ on turn 5 is like, and then Cryptic Command the turn before that. Like I don't know how you beat that.
It's really good.
I think you lose. I think that's well. I know you beat it, but it involves like Prized Amalgams and Arclade Phoenixes and other free 4/4s.
Your favorite things to talk about. So other things that I want to talk about today on the show, talking about cards that are making an impact, we have speculated a little bit about the impact that Simic Ascendancy was going to have. We didn't necessarily think that that was going to be a tier one strategy or necessarily was going to be the biggest card, but I know we both had some interest in it after watching its actual viability at the pre-release weekend. Like, people were playing it. It seemed to be very good.
The best alternate win condition cards, and we're going to talk about a lot of them right now, and almost none of them are true of this sentence, are cards that do a thing that's decent or good and then can accidentally also win you the game.
Win the game, right.
And I think Simic Ascendancy is the best of all of these cards at that. Because the card of green-green, put a bunch of +1/+1 counters on target creatures, if that is fine enough, or if you can play just like a one of those in a deck that makes it worth doing, the second half of it is just like an alternative combo wheel that goes off.
It's like surprising to, if you get this permanent down early, a lot of the matchups in Modern, the way that having like just making your land drops, having mana open and creatures, how much this can screw with your opponents. Mm-hmm. Like everything from combat math to being able to respond to a lightning bolt to like getting around a, you know, anger of the gods type of thing. Like, it's just good. And it's an enchantment, so when they wrath or something like that, you don't lose it. It just makes all your draws later in the game strong. So it's interesting. We're going to talk a little bit about alternate win conditions here and sort of the different good ones in Modern, or how you use the word good.
So we have a top 10 list, but we're not going to rank it. We're just going to go through 10 of them because they're all there is a number one. There is a
– well, yeah, we're gonna just
there's
talk
number
about
one. There's only one here that has ever performed well.
And we're going to go through a lot of them. Before we get to that, though, I wanted to remind everybody here, we do have a Facebook group, and that Facebook group is moderated by a wonderful group of people.
Yeah, so after a long time, we finally hit around 5,000 people in the Facebook group, and we figured it was time. And there's some drama that happened last week that we wanted to make sure that we had a little bit more people that had eyes on what's going on in the group so that it doesn't break down upon itself and become an unhappy place for people to interact with. And so we've now added a bunch of new moderators. Obviously, me and Ben are there. Hagen Kirk is still there. He's been moderating for a long time. He also does big Modern data dumps every Monday. So if you're in the group, he'll post a big list of how all of the Modern decks are doing right now. And like, if you really like statistics, he's very helpful for that. And then Michael Grothy was added.
Guest host of the cast, frequent
contributor just in general to Masters of Modern and friend. And then we've added some more people: Aaron Scott, Austin Cook, and Shoshi Hope.
And if you guys may have seen Shoshi at events before, she cosplays as Liliana.
Yep.
She's great. So
Austin Cook is actually a werewolf.
Really?
Yeah. Real life.
Is there an Austin Cook, the character that's a werewolf that I don't
know? No, I met him. Well, we met for the first time at Gen Con, and we hung out for a whole trip. We
played
Werewolf the whole
werewolf?
Time. Yeah.
You love Werewolf.
It's a great game. So, if anyone wants to play Werewolf at GPLA, I would absolutely love to host that.
And be sure to stay tuned in the Facebook group and our Twitter. We're talking about doing some sort of cool GPLA thing like we did in the last one, and we want to make sure you guys all know about it. We'll decide ahead of time enough that you guys will have some time to make your plans and make sure you can be available. If so, last time we had like 24 people participate in this crazy chaos draft, and it was so much fun. Everybody had a great time. So
if KCI Band of Spirits just the best deck in the format, no.
No, but Spirits is sweet.
I think that Spirits has a worse matchup against the world of super linear, not knowing what's going on format, and then you add that to the fact that Burn just got a lot better.
I don't think Spirits is good against Burn. Burn's faster than Spirits. So,
life gain?
Not really.
Yeah, cool.
Let's talk about some alt win conditions. We talked Simic Ascendancy, though. You know, we do have theories that card could go into some sort of Hardened Scales type of deck, and I think that there's possibly even some sort of like just like a graft style deck you could play that's pretty cool. But that's not really the point. We want to talk about ones that we think you guys aren't paying attention to, because in a new modern format with a big banning, there are ways to try to go over the top and discover something that no one else is doing. And some of these cards, I'm not saying we have a great build for any of them, but some of these cards have a shot. So we're going to start with
this guy. So many shots.
Bio-Visionary.
Look at all the shots he has.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Isn't there a new card printed, though, that's maybe decent? Oh, there's a Simic card. There's a Simic clone and removal spell or something.
No, it's just a clone, and then it...
No. Front end is Stifle. You can stifle things.
It's like a 2-mana stifle.
It's a 2-mana stifle hybrid. Back end is a 4-mana clone.
3-mana clone.
Hey, that's 100% better than this deck was an hour ago.
I think actually just trying to like manually copy your Bio-Visionary is not the way to win with this card. I've never felt that. I've always felt the best way to try to win with Bio-Visionary is to play a bunch of creatures and a Mirror Weave. That's what I had tried to
do. How much does Mirror Weave cost?
4, and it's an instant.
Okay.
So years ago, I had tried to build this deck. I tried to build like some sort of Bio-Visionary Fairies hybrid because everything has flash.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just like flashing in your Spellstutter Sprites and your Scion of Unas, and you could just like win the game by beating down, you know, Bitter Blossom or whatever. And then end of turn, or I guess, so clarify if this works for me. This trigger, so Bio-Visionary is green-blue 1 for a 2/3 human wizard. At the beginning of your end step, if you control 4 or more creatures named Bio-Visionary, you win the game. So if you're to Mirror Weave and make all creatures on the battlefield into Bio-Visionaries.
If your opponent has... No, you don't get it. They don't get it.
Because active player?
It's the beginning of the end... Oh, of the end step, not your end step.
So if you play it, it resolves. Mm-hmm. Whose creatures become Bio-Visionary?
So yours get put on the stack first and then theirs, right? So it's they win?
Is that true?
From Mirror Weave?
Yeah.
If I have 4 Bio-Visionaries and you have 4 Bio-Visionaries, or Ben has 4 Bio-Visionaries and it's my turn and I put Bio-Visionary in the stack.
So they would win. Right. So you would have to do it at the end of their turn.
Or remove at least one of their creatures so they have
3
or less.
Well, no, but that's assuming you would need to have another card. So I'm saying if you have 4 and they have 4, at the end of their turn, you would turn all creatures into Bio-Visionaries and you would win?
Someone is 10-0 against Burn with Burn against Spirits. Sorry, back to the
That seems strong. That is true, correct? You would, if you Mirror Weave during their turn, at the end of their turn, you would win because they're active player?
I have no idea. Both of these cards are bad.
Okay. Well, that's always been the way that I assumed the coolest way to win with the Bio-Visionary was. The other way to do it would be some sort of like Rite of Replication.
I think the problem with Bio-Visionary is that it's a 2/3 for 3 that doesn't do anything when you cast it.
Well, yeah, but it can win the game.
Doesn't do anything when you
said
cast it.
Said Bateman about every card on this list.
You know what can win you the game? A Flying Man, a 1/1 for 1.
You really don't have any faith in Bio-Visionary? Okay, fine. We can move on.
I think on this list it is in the top 5 cards to maybe win a game.
Do you know what card? You know what creature type it is?
That's true. What? It's a human wizard.
It's a wizard. Do you know that Modern has a wizard cycler called Vedalken Aethermage?
I'm gonna move on with my life.
Instant speed.
You know what? It is also a wizard and is the best card on this list by such a wide margin. is Laboratory Maniac. Two in a blue. If you draw a card, well, if you were to lose to mill, you win.
Let's explain actually what this is because
it's a 2/2 for 3 future human wizard. If you would draw a card while your library has no cards in it, you win the game instead.
So the premise here is that Ad Nauseam is able to create a situation between Ad Nauseam and Phyrexian Unlife that you can draw your entire deck, have no cards in your library, and then through means of mana filtering and Simian Spirit Guides and things, you can cast Laboratory Maniac.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that, though, is you still have to let your opponent untap, right? You don't.
Why? You just draw a card. Just cost yourself the draw card. It's not your upkeep.
It's not an upkeep trigger.
It's not a draw step.
So
it's
you
just
cast
if you draw
it.
A card after this is in play, you win.
So you, so you have to have the mana to draw a card off a cantrip.
Or you cast another. Yeah, there's like eight ways the deck has to kind of make it happen.
And so this is something people actually do. This is an alternative winning condition.
Correct. And also like Dredge plays, I think, one of these sometimes in the sideboard as ways to get around control
yep.
mirrors or whatever. Like there's different versions of this card doing well. And there will be more because there are more ways. Like it's much easier to get all of the cards out of your graveyard and have this in play than other things that exist.
Have you ever lost to a Laboratory Mana?
I have not, actually.
In Modern? Nor have I.
Every time I played against Ad Nauseam, they win with Lightning Storm. And I still lose that deck.
That's
when that happens.
How I lose
but
when I play against that deck. So.
Lad Maniac is rare. Our friend Paul has tried. I play a lot of spot removal in my life. I'm a big fan of Paths and Lightning Bolts,
yep.
and normally those kill Laboratory Maniacs pretty
fair,
good.
Fair.
Next card is Mechanized Production. 2BB, Enchantment Aura, Enchanted Artifact you control. At the beginning of your upkeep, create a token that's a copy of Enchanted Artifact. Then if you control 8 or more artifacts, win with the same name as one another, you win the game. Now, there's two reasons this card is good. One, it just wins.
Right.
Oh, no, it has to be the beginning of your upkeep. So you have to survive an upkeep. It goes into an artifact, which can often be something that survives for a turn because it's hard to remove.
I mean, it makes tokens. It's doing something proactive.
Mm-hmm. You can play it and just it be good.
Yeah, like you could just play this on a Mirror Superior and be happy.
Right? That's the thing you could do. I don't know if you'd be happy.
I would be personally thrilled if we did that. But,
yeah, no, you'll definitely play this on a Mirror Superior and be happy. You will lose.
You get two Mirror Superiors in a turn.
On your next turn.
It's amazing.
It's a 4-mana 5/6.
Ugh.
I feel like that's...
A delayed turn.
I can play Tarmogoyf.
I think what you were saying a second ago is that this was a thing in Standard because of the treasures and the clues and things that people were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do something similar in Modern. I think there's a lot of tokens that you can create. So, like, for instance, Hangerback Walker or anything like that, that you're making a lot of tokens that you already want to have.
Like a Thopter. Like,
yeah.
I think there's different ones. Do Thopters have names, though? They're all called Thopter. They are all called Thopter.
Thopters.
So, cool. So, yeah. So, you just got to pick a token theme with artifacts. If you're already playing that deck, this in your sideboard and your main deck can just win the game. I think this is one of the, like, I would say, looking at all the cards here, second best card on this list.
Well, yeah. You can actually do something cool with it. So, I think, you know, I could see building, like, a what does a Servo Schematic make servos?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if, like, a Servo Schematic style deck making a bunch of servos could be a thing. Some sort of looping artifact deck.
I think for servos to be the deck, we have to go back to Kaladesh. There's so many...
Thopters.
There's so many Thopters out there. There's so much treasure token countermakers out there. And treasure tokens, as we'll get to another card later, are something they want to make more of. There's treasure tokens in the Ravnica sets. The Orzhov, one of the Orzhov cards makes a treasure token. The fact that we're going to continue with treasure tokens being a thing that gets printed makes it more and more likely that this gets good. Same as Thopter tokens. Like both of those show up everywhere. And then last but not least, I think that clues are already kind of good, and Investigate was such a beloved mechanic from that block that, like, I think that also has a high potential to come back.
Yeah, that's fair. Next up,
next
Revel
up,
and Riches, I think.
Nope.
Oh no. There you go. A Thopter sword deck. That's a good way though. If you get to 8 tokens, you're probably winning anyway.
Maybe.
Probably. If you're able to get to 8 tokens, and you have both in play.
I've played against decks where getting to 10 tokens that fly is good, but not necessarily a win.
A game win? Okay.
But yeah, you're not wrong.
Next up, we have Battle of Wits. Blue 3, enchantment at the beginning of your upkeep. If you have 200 or more cards in your library, you win the game. This is a card people have tried to play with for years in multiple formats. And people have taken this to tournaments. I've played against Battle of Wits players. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a meme deck, but it is also probably... I would say this is the third best card, if not the second best card on this list, in the sense that it's just like people will play it. It does win the game. The limitation gets easier and easier to deal with the more and more cards they print into the world, because every tutor they print or every way they have to search for a card, this gets better and better. The deck is really fun. I've like gotten a chance to pilot different versions of it, and I think people will always try and break it. And I can see this being a thing. The moment Battle of Wits becomes anything better than tiered 4 is the moment it might get banned, though.
Because it's just too easy. Because it's just not requiring you to do almost anything other than just play a lot of good cards.
No.
Oh, because it's too big.
Because shuffling Battle of Wits decks
is
unsustainable for a tournament where it is played in any significant amount.
That's fair. That's a fair point. That's a fair point. So,
so
the Battle of Wits decks are, they always end up just feeling like big good stuff control decks with a ton of tutors. Mm-hmm. That's what they always are, and that's kind of what they have to be. So,
which is fine. I love yeah. that. I love that it exists. I just think that if this becomes anything close to tier one, it gets banned immediately.
Yep.
Same reason like that top is banned or eggs was banned. It's just a tournament can't handle Battle of Wits.
Fair.
Next is, and I have taken this to a PTQ at least, and a GP, I think. Dora to Nothingness. 5 mana. When Dora to Nothingness enters the battlefield, tapped. It's
an
artifact.
And you can pay Wooburg x2, tap, sacrifice it, target player loses the game.
So Wooburg is white, white, blue, blue, black, black, red, red, green, green is what he meant by Wooburg x2.
I didn't used to know what Wooburg was. I learned it once on a show. I think I learned it on Game Nights.
Wooburg?
They said it, and I didn't know what it was.
Oh.
I was embarrassed.
Yeah, you just...
Yeah.
It's the colors.
Yeah, I had no idea. So, how do you win with this? What do you do?
You play it.
Well, I realize that.
With a lot of mana.
But, like, what's the... In Modern, what would you play?
So, the place that I last saw it see the most plays was Omnithragdor decks back in Standard. Last time we had check lands and fetch lands in the same format together where you would, like, Omniscience this into play and then you would have the mana because you were Farseeking all game and Snapcastering Mage's Farseeking and then you could play this and then have a Fog open to Fog so you can untap with it and win.
Am I incorrect in thinking that this card paired with Wilderness Reclamation is not just insane?
This and Wilderness Reclamation could be very good together. You have to still get all 5 colors of mana into play, which is easier in Modern than any format other than Legacy.
That doesn't feel hard in Modern at all.
It doesn't untap this guy. But you can play this, have your mana untapped to Cryptic your next turn, and then you tap all the mana to tap it to kill your opponent.
He's just going to say, permanence that end of the battlefield tapped.
Amulet does let this come into play untapped, but I don't think you need to. I think if you're playing this with Reclamation, you play Reclamation, you play this, you untap, you have counter magic, because what else are you doing here? And then on your next turn, you just win.
Hmm. Interesting. I like that idea. I think that this card is cool. I think, obviously, it's pretty easy to execute. This is probably one of the better ones, now that I think about it. Like, a lot of ramp, things that double your mana, there's a lot of that stuff.
This is a one of card that there are a lot of things that you can just include this with. There's a lot of hoops you have to jump through, and I would want that deck to be good otherwise. Hmm. But if this is what you're doing, the question is there a better use of 10 mana of every color? Because I think there probably is. Like all of the Eldrazi.
Just getting to 10 and just casting.
It is instant speed. So the fact that you can play with Wild Reclamation is the most interesting thing that has been said in this episode about talking about all of these cards.
Yeah.
That is the first time we have said something that was like, yeah, that could be a thing.
Yeah, Wilderness Reclamation. You heard it here first, guys.
They're already talking about it.
Yeah, sweet. I'm so excited for the next card on the list. I'm so excited.
This card, I will admit that I've lost to the card that we're about to see more than any other card on this,
list
combined.
Yeah.
Combined,
I
hate.
The card is Near-Death Experience. White, 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 2 enchantment at the beginning of your upkeep. If you have exactly 1 life, you win the game. The fact that this card is still valued only at 54 cents is absurd. no, it's not.
No, it's correct.
I play this card in Highlander Roulette, and I stubbornly play it in my like Esper control deck with all the good tutors, and I refuse to get rid of it because I want to win with it. I've seen someone do this before in Modern. I've seen there was a streamer who was building a deck around this card. It's easier than you think. Now, in in Modern, it's a little tougher because Lightning Bolt is such a prominent card.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you would get to a game state where you would play this and try to win, very often you would just get burned out as the trip. But if you guys don't understand how it works.
To give you a little bit of a breakdown of what the metagame for this format that we've played a lot of but no one else on the planet does, it is a format that is singleton among 6 decks. And because of that, burn removal spells are bad for 2 reasons. One, because you generally don't have the frequency of cards to be able to have them regularly. Like, there's 1 Lightning Bolt over 6 cards, and there's only so many instant speed.
Most people just play a
burn
deck.
Spells. And then there is one person who's a burn deck that has all of them in there. Normally is a deck that would exist. So then those are all in that deck. That's one issue. The other issue is that you have the fact that most creatures in the format are big or problematic. So, yeah.
So, yeah, the way this works, if you guys are wondering, is like a lot of these. The trigger goes on the stack every upkeep, and if you don't have 1 life, you don't win the game. Which means if you have any instant speed way to pay down to 1 life and a way to interact with your opponent, let's say it's a Thoughtseize or let's say it's a counterspell, any way to make sure you don't die when they try to interact with you, you can pay instant speed down to one with the trigger on the stack and win the game. But you don't have to, like, do it the turn before and be at exactly one when it goes off. You can pay down to one exactly in response. So take a card like Plunge into Darkness, which is one black, one colorless, instant. Look at the top X cards of your library. Put one in your hand, the rest on the bottom of your library, and you can pay X life to do it. Instant speed for two mana, you can just pay down to one. Look at the top X cards of your library, and yeah, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the thing. Near Death is not a modern level card, but Near Death's a really cool card, and I do think there's probably a metagame that will exist at some point in Modern where somebody could, like, spike a tournament with this card.
Yeah, I think someone might win a tournament with this card. It'll be like a FNM or a Thursday Night Magic. But
we should GPLA. Now, I remembered this morning that I promised you and Alex, you the viewers, and Alex, my co-host,
that you'll take a real deck
that
to
I
GPLA.
Would play a real deck at GPLA. I promised. And this was a month ago, and I thought about it in the shower this morning. For some reason, it came into mind, and I was so upset when I realized I had said it, because GPLA is getting close, and I was getting so excited about all the things I could play, and I was like, none of those are real decks. Not even close to being real decks.
So I'm going to quickly apologize. There is construction happening in our offices that will eventually lead to us having even a nicer studio space. First step is doing a bathroom. So there is some sounds you might be hearing in the background. We are almost done. So we're just going to wrap up soon. And we're going to go through these last two cards and then end the episode. And there'll be some hammering and sawing in the background at the beginning of this episode.
Sweet.
Next card we've talked about a few times is Revel the Riches. When a creature an opponent controls dies, create a colorless treasure artifact token with sacrifice this to add any mana to your color to your mana pool at the beginning of your upkeep. If you control 10 or more treasures, you win the game. Now, the first half of this card is kind of just an almost playable card effect. Like, it's something that I would even think about doing. The back end of this card, there were enough treasure cards out there to be able to get to that number of treasures.
Yeah.
And this is, I believe, the card Marshall was talking about Toward the Nothingness, which just does also let you get, if you can get a bunch of treasure in the play, you can get all the colors of mana. It wasn't what he was thinking about.
I was thinking of Maze's End.
Oh, he was thinking about Maze's End. A different card we'll be talking about. Spoilers. Oh, that's true. Watch play Amulet. So we're just gonna play a deck with all of your win conditions.
Oh my god! I know what I'm playing at GBLA.
Oh no.
Oh my god.
I think you could play of the cards in here Lab Maniac, Biovisionary, and Symmetric Sins.
If you need extra space, it's a Battle of Wits deck. Yeah.
Mechanized Production, Battle of Wits, Door to Nothingness, Near Death Experience, Revel Riches, Approach of the Sun, and Maze's End all do fit.
We didn't talk about Approach of the Second Sun.
Because that's next.
Oh, you said two more cards. I was confused.
I meant three.
Yes, okay.
I lied to you.
So, yeah, Revel.
Two more after the card we were on, which is Revel the Riches.
We'll end with Maze's End. We mentioned it. I think this and Approach of the Second Sun, just because they're both recent alt win conditions in Standard. And
we don't have to break down thoroughly. Also, they're not sighing right now. But we can, like, this is obviously pretty cool. Like, the fact that one of your you can kill all your creatures, opponent's creatures. If there's ever a deck that has, like, they take a bunch of turns of sacrificing creatures to go off, maybe a Birthing Pod deck.
Mm-hmm.
This being in play is just going to be harder for them to beat. Yeah.
And it's black, like, you can Damnation alongside it and, like, wrath a bunch of creatures and stuff like that. So
there's a version of this deck that we're describing where you win with a Mechanized Production, where you never get to the mana you need to play Door of the Nothingness, but you just copy enough of them that you win.
You win with 8 Door to Nothingnesses?
But no, not the mana to play it. It'd be great. Living the dream. Next is Approach of the Second Sun. This is another one of the ones that's just really good. It's a card that gains you 7 life when you cast it, and then also if you cast it twice, you win, correct?
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. I think that's just fine.
People have played this in Standard a lot. This was like,
I think
a
people,
real...
people play this in Modern. I've, like, seen people win with this in Modern, like, just in a control deck that you're just, like...
It's a good win con. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty easy. It's hard to deal with.
I don't totally believe that a 7-mana sorcery in Modern is, like, the way to win. Just, like, there's
enough. Well, but you've seen, like, people play Sphinx's Revelation. There are decks out there, control decks specifically, that play one of hard-to-deal-with threat that you are going to have to beat, otherwise I win. And this doesn't have a thing on play. When you cast it the first time, you gain a bunch of life, so you're able to survive a little bit longer. Like,
right.
It does a lot of things a control deck wants. And then you just eventually win. Like, it's hard to beat. I think this also is on probably... We were, for a moment, only going to do 5 cards because we didn't know how much time we would have, and I would have fought pretty hard
for
to make sure this
be
was on
a top
the 5.
5, yeah.
It might even be higher than that.
Maybe you play a black-white near-death experience deck with Dark Confidant and your 7-drop that goes 3rd from the top. Now you know it's coming. You can plan out your life total exactly to lose 7 when you flip it. And
well,
win.
Plus, if you have Laboratory Maniac, just in case you drop past it for some reason. All right. And last but not least, and I've thought about trying to make this work in Modern a few times. I had this in Highlander.
I remember.
Of all places. Is Maze's End. Land, Maze's End enters the battlefield tapped. Add one color to your mana pool of no color. Just add a colorless mana. And then three mana, tap it. You can return it to your hand. Search your library for a gate card. Put it on the battlefield, then shuffle your library. If you control 10 or more gates with different names, you win the game. That is all part of the same ability, so you only win the game if you activate it. The first thing to talk towards is Thawing Glaciers, which is a very old card. It's one mana to...
Yeah.
You put a land into play, and then at the end of turn, you return it to your hand, is really good. It was a standard powerhouse during then. It's been played in Legacy at different times. It is one of the best cards in Commander. If I were to pick a top 10 lands in Commander list, it would possibly be number 10. It's really good. This is that. Cost 3 mana. It's different because that goes at the end of the end step, so if you wait to untap it or keep it around like a Sundial of the Infinite, it can... like stay around and keep going. This one happens immediately. The difference here is that you can, if you have a amulet, which we talked about, you can get two triggers off of this because you can play it. You can have it in turn, use the ability, returns to your hand, play it again as your land for the turn. It'll come into play untapped, and you can now use the gate you got the first time to use it again.
Sure.
You kind of can go off as long as you have enough mana to do it. Any extra play, extra land effects like an Explore or the new blue-green guy that lets you play extra lands are really good with it. So there's a lot of cool things you could do with it. I think the fact that there are now – sorry, I just tapped my mic. There are now 8 Explores in the format is like definitely a thing worth talking about with this card.
I like Growth Spiral a lot.
And Growth Spiraling this at the end of their turn so that you can untap with it and then activate it on your turn to like win the game even. Like, and there's now a lot of new cards printed that care about gates that are good. Like if you were to go through all of the gate themed cards over the last 2 sets, you probably can get pretty close to a playable deck. I think it's tier 3, but I think it's a deck that's pretty cool, and I would love to see people try building it.
Would you build wasn't there a defender creature that added mana equal to the number of gates you controlled? Was that a thing that existed?
Yes.
Oh, it's Gatekeeper Vine versus Overgrown Battlement. Those are the 2 cards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
And then new cards, there's the 8/8 that's one less for every gate you
control.
There's
Gate Guardian, I think it's called.
There's Gate Colossus.
Gate Pyroclasm, which is really good.
Okay,
there's like a bunch of new gate cards that are like very powerful. And this is a 5-color deck. So you can also play Door of the Nothingness.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I think we've gone off the rails officially. So this was a great show topic.
Who doesn't love a rail?
Yeah.
I don't, because we're off of it.
Yeah, there you go.
Someone did point out that approach, if you remand your approach...
Yeah.
Oh, you do get it.
...cast it a second time in the win.
Oh, that's why 9. That's
because
why someone...
only asked that you cast it, not that it resolved.
Well, it doesn't take 9. That takes still... That now takes 16, but you can, on your turn, do it, burn a remand. If you've, like, locked your opponent out of the game, like they have no cards in hand and their board is empty, you can cast it the first time, remand, and do it again.
Sweet. All right, guys, that's going to wrap us up for the day.
I want to rate it really quick since this is what we normally do, and we kind of talked about it. I think in order we go Laboratory Maniac is number 1.
Sure.
Number 2 is Approach of the Second Sun.
I think that's fair, yeah.
Number 3 is...
I don't know if it's Simic Ascendancy, but it's possible.
I feel like it's Maze's End. Okay. Based on what we just talked about.
That's fair.
Then after that, I would probably put Mechanized Production.
Seems like actually doable.
Then Simic Ascendancy.
Yeah.
Door to Nothingness.
Sure.
Net Revel of Enriches.
You don't put Battle of Wits higher than this?
Oh, Battle of Wits is before Door to Nothingness. Fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So Battle of Wits, Door to Nothingness, Near Death Experience is nowhere near the top. Revel Enriches, Biovision, and Near Death and Spirits are all kind of bad.
I love
so
my
put
two
them all
favorites,
at the bottom.
Biovisionary and Near Death Experience. Alex is just like, these are not possible. You're dumb.
Oh, no, I think Near Death Experience is possible. There are a lot of ways to make Near Death Experience work.
You're just
bitter. I think Biovisionary is a bad card.
You're just bitter because you've lost the Near Death like a lot of times, and now you have like PTSD with that card.
Not a lot
you
of
just,
times.
You just flinch. You cringe. You had a literal physical reaction.
I think that
wraps us up. Okay.
Marshall. We're going to give you a rating that is more verbal, and we're going to put it in the video form. So as a special thing to people watching this in video form, you'll actually see what the rating list we just said out loud instead of trying to follow our conversation, which was hard.
Yeah. I had
it'll be in the show notes, too. All right. Thanks, everyone. Make sure to follow our sister podcast as well. They're
Command
on
Zone.
iTunes. They're at collected.company. They're also on
Stitcher and iTunes and Google Play and all the places you can find stuff. Same place you can find our stuff. They have a show called Game Nights. That is awesome that they do.
We've both been on it.
They also have a show called Extra Turns now. They really make top-notch content, so be sure to check out their stuff. Also, rate and review the show. Please share it with your friends, your gaming group on Facebook, what have you. You know, we're trying to be super topical now as we go into this year and make sure that we're covering stuff that you guys want to hear us talk about.
A lot of creams, some face masks.
Topical, funny. reach out via email to us. We have currently in the intro and outros a little bit like some outdated stuff, and in the outro we reference emails at rocketjump.com. Do we have an updated email that people can send emails to? We're going to change the outro.
I think
soon,
it's themmcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, themmcast@gmail.com is where you guys should send an email if you actually do want to reach us. And finally, Patreon.com/TheMMCast. Guys, there's going to be updates to the Patreon coming really soon. We're going to be talking about kind of new ways to use it, new ways to interact, to build it into more of a community. We really want to reward those of you that have stayed as patrons for a long time, and that's something we're really excited about. But in the meantime, Patreon.com/TheMMCast is literally how we're able to do this show. We bought the Zoom off of, you know, holding on to the small amount that is in that Patreon for a very long time. That's how we could afford it, and we have now hired a producer, so trying to keep this thing going, and that is the best way to help us continue to do that and to help to be part of this community. So I just bumped the mic. Thank you guys so much for all of your support.
What's the creature that if you cast it you lose, but if they do damage to a player they lose?
Phage the Untouchable.
Phage, thank you.
And that's gonna wrap that up. So thank you guys so much. Thanks to Marshall. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. We'll be back same time, same place next week, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.